This is a mental health podcast. Specifically, it's Depresh Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Because it's a mental health podcast, we talk a lot about different things that can cause mental health issues, stuff that can lead to some problems. Difficult family situations at home, genetic chemical imbalance, surviving a traumatic event, those can all cause a lot of problems. Here's a potential cause that we haven't covered before. Spitting into a cup. Yes, spitting into a cup, but it has been leading to a lot of depression in recent years. Spitting into a cup has led to some existential crises, traumatic stress, strained family relationships. Spitting into a cup, my friends, has been donking folks up. I mean, okay, it's not the spitting itself that's causing problems. It's when you spit into the cup, you mail it off to people who test it, then they read the DNA information, and then they tell you who you genetically are, who your parents genetically are, which might be different than who you always believed them to be. Since the advent of home DNA testing with services like 23andMe or Ancestry.com, it's been happening a lot. Family secrets getting exposed, not even exposed, ripped violently open, affecting tons of people, generations of people. It's an existential walloping as the basic truth of your family identity is shattered. You're still you, but it can feel like you aren't the person you thought you were and never have been. Eve Sturgis is a therapist in Los Angeles. She has been really interested in this topic, so much so that she started a podcast called Everything's Relative, where she talks to people whose lives have been upended by unexpected DNA results. I think we need to learn an acronym, some of our listeners do, because it's an acronym that comes up a lot, NPE. Please explain this.
Yes, an NPE is a genealogical term that comes from the world of family tree building, and it stands for not parent expected or a non-paternal event.
Okay, so this is when there's a surprise in one's genealogical search.
Yes. Traditionally, it was just a note on family trees, like very, very literally just a note when people were making family trees that if somebody's parent turned out to not be their biological parent, a genealogist would just jot down NPE. And now, especially because of mail-in DNA kits, more and more people are discovering that their own parents, one or both, are not their parents. So as a community, those people have come together and kind of claim the label, and where it's all sort of, it's not controversial in any sort of exciting sense, but NPE is not quite a verb and it's not quite a noun. And people say, I am an NPE or I had an NPE, but it means that one or more parents is not who they thought they were.
There was a twist. There was an M. Night Shyamalan moment in the family tree. Yeah.
Yes.
And so that's what your podcast is built around, talking to people who've had these NPEs. I keep thinking of NPH, which is, of course, Neil Patrick Harris, which has nothing to do with any of this. So you're talking to mostly people who have had these events or these discoveries, and then a few other people who are kind of experts in the field. How did you become so interested in this topic?
Oh, thank you for asking. I became interested in this topic when I experienced an NPE or discovered that I am an NPE almost 4 years ago. A man, a stranger man from out of the blue, contacted my husband and said, I really need to talk to you about your wife. And it's just an interesting detail that really has nothing to do with the end result. But so I said, yes, you should contact this person immediately. And that man said to my husband, I think I'm Eve's father. So for me, it didn't come from a mail-in DNA kit. It came from a phone call. But we then immediately did mail-in DNA kits to confirm that this man was correct.
And the results pointed to this man.
Yeah, to this man who I'd never, ever heard of.
And obviously, for the purposes of our discussion, and you're a therapist as well and a podcast host, so I think you know that I'm not asking you to share any more of it than you wish to share. But how has that changed your life, that discovery that, you know, has a new relationship informed? What's happened as a result?
Yeah, well, you know, it's I'm a pretty open book about it, and I talk about, that's part of having a podcast. And I could tell you the whole story, but I just don't want to take over the podcast, your podcast, and just like drown you out for 20 minutes. Like, and then this happened. And then, so it changed my life completely. And something that we talk about in my community a lot is how it changes everything, although also nothing. So from the outside, things look pretty much the same. But emotionally, it is one kind of sort of existential trauma crisis that can really rock somebody's world. So for me, it changed the whole way that I looked at my childhood. It changed not only the way that I looked at and understood who my parents to be, but it has completely changed the relationship I have with my mom and dad, who are married to this day and were married when I was born. And then it's opened my eyes and introduced me and to this whole new world of people.
Well, and as you say, this is a community. There's a lot of people in this same situation. So in that sense, your situation isn't unique. But in the sense that you started a podcast about it, it is unique. Why start a podcast?
Fair question. I started a podcast. I couldn't get out of my mind the idea that individuals were making decisions about their babies, mostly. And like, you know, if I'm just being really blunt and simplistic about it, I just kept thinking about pregnant women facing whatever kind of challenge they were facing that was making them choose to lie for one reason or another about who the father was. I just couldn't get that out of my mind. And I thought, they don't know the stories. They don't know what happens when we're adults, and they don't understand what happens to us when we find out, and that we will find out, maybe not 50 years ago and maybe not 100 years ago before DNA became so widely available, DNA testing, but they need to know. And I thought, how can I get these stories out so that these people will know? I don't have any confirmation that a single person in that position has listened to my podcast, but it turns out that people within the community need to tell their stories, and we need to hear each other's stories. And so it's kind of taken on a life of its own.
As someone who's had a lot of these conversations with people, and as a therapist yourself, are all NPEs traumatic? Anybody who's coming through it, is it trauma?
Not always.
Okay.
Not always.
When is it not?
Some people suspect it all along. Occasionally, there you'll hear of people not getting along with their parents anyway. And you'll hear people, they just say it isn't. And so I have to take them at their word. They say it's not traumatic, so it's not. And I don't know. Some people can certainly move through the trauma and get to a place of not being traumatized. But there, of course, there's people that say they're not traumatized.
What are the most common reactions to this?
It's very much like the stages of grief. We talk about that a lot. So it can be denial, especially for people that are getting DNA results through the big companies like Ancestry.com or 23andMe or the ones you think of. You know,
oh, they make mistakes all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
it must be a mistake. And this doesn't make any sense. And I don't know who these people could be. And wow, I have a lot of relatives I don't know. And I didn't know we were Italian. You know, just and it's denial and it's reasoning. You know, if you just can't fathom something, you're going to think of a lot of other reasons why the data you're looking at doesn't match what you imagined it would. So there's a lot of denial. There's denial on both sides. You know, often people will go to their parents and say, hey, it's turning out that dad isn't on my matches. What's going on there? And parents will often say, oh, DNA testing is just it's a joke. It's a fluke. It's a fake science. A lot of denial, a lot of shock. A lot of people describe experiencing kind of physical, emotional, world turning upside down experiences, kind of like Allison through the looking glass, you know, feeling dizzy, and then anger and grief and confusion, a lot of confusion, and then can be curiosity. People can be curious, and people can be longing for different kinds of relationships and be devastated by the relationships they did have or the relationships that they didn't have.
Is it ever great? Like, does anybody ever feel like, hey, I won the lottery? You know, like, oh, look, my real father was like a champion marathon runner. I got to get out there. Things are going to be better now. That kind of thing?
Yes and no. I think, yes, there are absolutely people that connect with their biological relatives, and it turns out to be wonderful. No one yet in the communities that I have been a part of and that I know has announced anything like, it turns out my parents are these billionaires and they've given us all this money and right. and they love me so much and they've accepted me into the family. But lots of people, there's lots of warm welcomes. There's lots of reunions that go really well. And there's lots of rejections that don't go well.
As far as you know, how reliable are those tests? Like, you know, if that's the rationalization, people say, oh, those aren't reliable. This, you know, I'm sure my real father is my father that I thought, you know, that's not reliable. How reliable are they as far as you know?
Extremely.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who's really ready for the outliers.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really sort of skeptical in general. So I'm waiting for somebody to say, here's an example of a false DNA. Here's an example of one that didn't go well or that didn't have the right results. And it just keeps not happening. that person has yet to step forward, or that example. So it's very, very reliable. And lots of people within our community and within the other sort of communities or worlds or cultures growing out of the DNA science, like crime, a lot of crime finding, a lot of detective work and stuff. You know, everybody's keeps turning to the experts and asking that question and saying, how reliable is this? And everybody keeps saying it's extremely reliable.
Yeah. Yeah. So as the host of a mental health program here, I've been thinking about, okay, what is the mental health impact on people who are NPEs or have had people from this community? And I would think that the biggest jolt of something like this would be the existential one, this fundamental notion of, here's who I know myself to be. Oh, it turns out I'm wrong. I think that would mess me up the most. Is that where the most mental health turbulence comes from? Is that basic root existential idea?
Yes, absolutely. It can be on a quite the spectrum of extremes, but yeah, I think even the most grounded person would be very surprised to find out how shook they are by this kind of experience. It's very existential. It can affect people, especially when they come from families that are really strong about their genealogy or their lineage or their religion or their country
strong,
of origin.
What do you mean strong?
Like if you're in a family that is Italian pride all the time, and we are Italian, and we're Italian, and we're Italian men, and we act like this because this is how Italians act, and we eat like this because this is how Italians eat. We yeah. look like
Guess
this.
Guess what? You're Turkish.
Right. Or like, yeah, or Irish. And it can really affect people who are Jewish to find out that they are not biologically Jewish. Or the other way around, people discover they are Jewish or half Jewish. There's a lot of people, there's a whole growing world of people discovering they're Ashkenazi Jew. And then what I would say is one of the biggest consequences that is existential and very real and literal is that medical history, people are just blown away that they have lived for however many years thinking that they knew what they were at risk for, only to discover they were not, or they're at risk for something else, or it explains something or does not explain something. I just talked with somebody who his father suffered from really bad unipolar depression and ended up taking his own life when the person I talked to was 16. So he lived his whole life terrified of depression and mental illness and so afraid and afraid for his children. And then to find out his father wasn't his father and he couldn't have inherited that.
Mm.
But he was 70.
And at that point, the depression might have happened just as a result right. of a lifetime of worry.
Right, right, right. And depending on your perspective, depression is or is not as serious as liver disease or heart function or cancer, a lot of breast cancer. A lot of women very surprised and upset and shocked to discover they come from either a line of breast cancer or not.
Right. What happens then after the jaw has been collected from the floor and after you've had this existential tidal wave wallop you, how does that play out in someone's mental health going forward? I mean, do you see depression developing? Do you see other dissociation? What do you see developing from that?
I would say, and I think I'm not alone in this, I think depression is going to present itself the most. And depression that manifests as sadness, confusion, and anger more than anything, and distrust, to be betrayed. People feel really betrayed and confused, which I keep bringing up. So it's often depression, and it can look like, you know, however this acts out, but the statements like, well, if this isn't true, if I didn't know this, then maybe I don't know anything. People, especially when family relationships break down, people cut each other off. It blows entire families up. So it's also kind of like a mourning process. They've lost their parents, or they've lost siblings. They've lost people because they don't want to hear about it or talk about it.
Yeah, they lost the relationship that they thought they had. Yeah. They lost the definition of the relationship that they'd had.
Right. And it's not totally uncommon, although it's less than most, I guess, is people sometimes come from really gruesome or hard or dark stories. And that can be really depressing to find out that they come from, as you can imagine, all sorts of sort of sordid sexual experiences that are disturbing on.
That would be covered up. Yeah.
Right. That then would be covered up and disturbed for yourself, disturbed for your mother.
So something I find really interesting on your show, on Everything's Relative, is the huge difference in the family response. Because often the person that you're interviewing is comfortable enough to go on a podcast, you know, and be pretty open. And at the same time, the relatives are not at all, either because they're not over the shock or because a secret has been exposed that was being very deliberately kept. Is that the source of the complications of the family response? That must create a whole new host of mental health issues for that subject.
Whole new host. You know, one thing that I think everybody would agree kind of courses through everybody's story, regardless of how it was put together, is shame. So they feel shame for themselves. They feel shame for the other people. Everybody's feeling shame in one way or another and acting responsibly or irresponsibly about it. Like many things, people are expressing that they feel really healed and good or cathartic telling their stories. So a lot of them come to me saying this feels really good to do this. I really need to say this all out loud. And some people want to be anonymous because family is not into it. And I had one woman tell a story, and it's just I guess it just shows how people feel. Like, one is when things like this happen, I think everybody feels incredibly isolated. You feel alone and like you're the only one. And then also, regardless of reality, the vulnerability that you feel, the families feel, or the people, everybody involved feels like there's a big spotlight on them. I did have a woman tell her story, and she mentioned relatives by first name, and they all had incredibly, in my opinion, bland American names. And then those people heard the episode and were so furious and felt like they had really been called out and identified. You know, I got a number of emails, but one of them, I don't know anything about you, but you know everything about me. And I don't. I think her name, you know, it's like Kelly, school teacher or something, you know, like I don't.
There's
but
probably
her,
a few. Yeah.
Yeah. She felt like a layer of skin had been ripped off as far as how vulnerable she felt. So it's all relative.
Yeah, so to speak. Coming up, what is the future of NPEs? And by that, I mean, what is the future of society's views on privacy and sex and power and women and transparency and the internet? Back with Eve Sturgis, creator and host of the Everything's Relative podcast. And just so you know, I wanted to bring you this interview, even though obviously not all that many people will have these world-changing DNA discoveries. And I wanted to bring it to you because I think the idea of this discovery and this kind of revelation moment is analogous to figuring out your mental health, getting help, getting a diagnosis, getting an idea of what went wrong. It can be a lot like that DNA surprise moment, I think. You have this idea that you are you, self-evidently, but then there's something else involved. And so you have to figure it all out again with the burden and wisdom and eventually the strength of all that knowledge. Do you feel a sense of mission that part of what you're doing is kind of blowing up secrets because they need to be blown up, whether people are ready or not?
Yes. Although I would hate to also think that I'm invading specific families and forcing people to face truths that they may not be ready. But I think as a society and a culture, we have a really big problem with sex and shame and birth and women. And I think that until we address those issues, this stuff is going to keep happening. So in that way, it really feels like a mission to talk about this for me.
To show what happens on the other side of the NPE.
Yeah.
Because in many ways, that's sort of the beginning of the story. Like, mm-hmm. It alludes to something happening before, but
right.
The stories you tell are about the people who, you know, are right. happened
and
afterwards.
And this whole, our whole society, so many families, so I'll, you know, generally sort of a standard average American presentation is one thing, but the numbers coming out of NPEs is so showing something completely different.
Right.
So we need to talk about that. Why are we doing that? Why are we presenting as one way? But it's all about sex. Like, you know, it's so much about sex.
Do you think NPEs will decrease as our society goes on? I guess I'm asking if we're becoming a more transparent society. Do you think NPEs are on their way out, that eventually there won't be any point in covering these things up because people will figure it out anyway?
Yes. To answer simply, yes. I think it will still always happen, but I think the more and more and more common and popular and well-known DNA testing becomes, the more people will realize that there's just no hiding it anymore. And I also think that a lot of people in my world are older. They're of an older generation when there, A, was not technology, and B, there was less birth control options. And so I think as that generation passes on and new generations are born, they'll be born into this technical age. They'll be born into this data. They'll be born. And I hope that most people would think like, oh, I can't lie about this because Facebook exists and DNA exists and the internet exists. There's no way I could keep this a secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think about in Jurassic Park, not that anybody's related to dinosaurs, but there's a line about scientists being so concerned what they could do, they never stop to think about what they should
do. Think of what they should do.
Yes. Are you glad that things like 23andMe or Ancestry exist, or do you wish they had never existed?
I wouldn't say that I'm glad they exist. I guess I would fall in the neutral category. Like, they do exist, but you're absolutely right when it comes to exploring the ethics and morals of these experiences for people, and the science behind it combined with the industry of it and the capitalism.
It's here now, so
mm-hmm. right it's here now.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people wish they didn't know. A lot of people express that they wish they didn't find out the secret. When people ask me that, I don't have a yes or no answer. Same, like, but it did. Like, it did happen. So I don't know if I have a wish that it did or didn't.
I mean, why would they take the test if they were confident that it was just going to say stuff that they thought they already knew?
Right.
I guess the distant relatives. I have an idea for a TV show. Tell me if you'll join me as a producer on this TV show.
Okay.
We do one of these, except it's for those kits that you get for dogs where they find out the breed. Mm-hmm. And then you have to break it to the dog. Like, we had this done for my dog, Maisie. Like, I sit down with her and say, it turns out you're part Cocker Spaniel.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I would love it.
And then we just get a close shot of the dog just thinking about nothing at all.
Yeah. Yeah, bringing in a Cocker Spaniel to see how they interact for the first time and not knowing that they're related.
Right. You had no idea that beagles were in your background, but I'm here to tell you, you know, and if you want to join in with beagle culture and learn more about it now, you can. We can get you some toys that are beagle specific and then just have the dog not care at all.
I'm on board. I'm 100% on board.
I'll call Netflix.
Okay, great.
Have you treated patients as a therapist dealing with the shock of an NPE? Have you had people in your office about this?
Yes. It's not the majority of my clients, but it's definitely a handful.
How do you go about treating something like that? How do you go about helping somebody in distress from an event like that?
It often starts with a lot of validation, a lot of normalizing whatever emotions they're experiencing, and often looking at it through the lens of the five stages of grief, being there to listen. And I encourage them to join a community, to be a part of the community, because it's so powerful to learn that you are not alone. And slowly but surely, resources are becoming more available. So there are a few books and a few podcasts and these groups of people. And then a lot of people, I'm a really big believer in being of service as a healing mode. So when and if people are ready, I may encourage them to help other NPEs in one way or another, or find another way to be helpful.
I would think that building up the self and like finding some more of your power within, accessing more of the power you have and giving yourself more credit would be really important at this point, because your family of origin scenario might be a little more rickety, a little less able to give you that support. And this other background you have is just being discovered, may be helpful, may be reachable or not reachable. And so I would think that empowering the individual becomes even more important at that point.
Absolutely. So much focus on what you can control and what you cannot control, which comes down to the only place there's power is within yourself. So it so often circles back around to that. And, you know, following a client's lead. I don't go anywhere they're not ready to go. So it can be slower or faster as a process.
You've done many episodes. You've talked to a lot of people on the show, and I imagine you've talked to a ton more that haven't been broadcast. What's a story that you've talked about with someone that has really stayed with you long after the discussion happened?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, so many. So many. I think because my heart is really dedicated to the social issues I mentioned about women and sex and lies and birth control and feminism and society, I'm often really struck by women who discover that they come from unseemly events and primarily rape. Not because that is so surprising, but I'm so struck by imagining what their mothers as young women were facing. So I had a woman I spoke with last season who discovered that her father was not her father, you know, asked her mother, had known her mother was young, but dug into it and discovered that there was a time when part of American infrastructure was dedicated to building these pipelines, and all these pipeline workers were going from town to town to town to lay pipeline, right, from Canada to the South. And so there are all these babies were born along the pipelines from these men, and families were encouraged to host these men. And her mom was 13 when she got pregnant by a pipeliner. So I'm really struck by the severity of those stories and sort of moved and disturbed. But then also there are stories like medical history sounds like a very boring topic, but there are people, you know, like I mentioned before, that just agonize over particular things to discover that they didn't need to, or they should have been agonizing over something else.
Yeah, I was just listening to that story with the woman you're talking about, and it's
oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, just before we started, in fact, and it really struck me how she had grown up with in a tough situation with her parents had been separated, and her mother-in-law was awful, and then her mom didn't want to tell her these stories. She had to figure these things out, and then it was a long, long road. But you can hear in the face of this uncertainty, this growing resolve, you hear her empowering herself. It's really, it ends up being kind of heroic and beautiful by the end, even though it came from really awful beginnings.
Right. Well, and I think so much of it is it about offering acceptance and forgiveness and love to this entire generation of women who were young women and have been hiding these secrets for up to 70 years, holding these secrets out of shame. And so for these
people who are so oppressed, people, these women were just kept down and kept quiet for their lives.
Right, right. And so for this woman to understand her history was hard, but it also gave her this opportunity to understand her mother in a new way and try and help her mother accept self-forgiveness.
Yeah. Last question. People hearing this might think, gosh, you know, I really should pick up one of those tests. I really should go find this out if they haven't already. And God knows these tests aren't going anywhere and they're easily available. What do you think people should know before hearing the results or before testing in the first place?
There's a lot of talk about that, and a lot of people really wish that there were more and bigger warnings before people took a test, test.
Yeah, they're called recreational tests, which yeah, I think is a bit of a misleading name, I think.
Yeah, there's things about, like, there should be labels on them, like a pack of cigarettes, about what could happen.
Yeah, yeah. That's Eve Sturgis, creator and host of Everything's Relative. There are plenty of episodes of Eve's show, by the way, that are not traumatic, and they are even fun and funny. There is a rich variety, you know, like families and humans. Okay, really, you know, when you deal with family and identity and truth and technology, there's a lot going on there, and your head might be kind of spinning right now. Well, we're going to get your head recentered right after the break.
Hi, I'm Janet Varney, and just like you, I survived high school. And we're not alone. On my podcast, The JV Club, I invite some of my friends to share the highs and lows of their teen years, like moments with Aisha Tyler.
But when you're a kid, the stakes are just pretty low. Go to school, try not to get in trouble, get laid.
Jamila Jamil.
I watched television probably every waking hour during that time when I was shit-faced on medicine.
And Dave Holmes.
We talked and talked, and then everybody left. It was just us two, and I was like, I love you.
Learn how you too can be a functioning adult after the drama and heartbreak of high school. Every week on the JV Club with Janet Varney. Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. This is a judgment-free show.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aether Sea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Time for a meditation moment with our friend Laura House, the co-host of the Tiny Victories podcast here on Maximum Fun. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
You know, we talk a lot about anxiety and depression on this show. They're kind of
you know, they're big stars in our world.
They're super popular right now.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's doing it.
They're really trending.
And, you know, I've often heard it said that depression is this fear about the past and anxiety is a fear about the future. Mm. And a lot of people can get stuck in this cycle of like worrying a lot about what happened before, worrying a lot about what's about to happen. And of course, mm-hmm. the missing component in past and future is the present. And yes. that's kind of what the meditation's all about, is like rediscovering that you are alive right now, right here.
Yeah, it is. It's a, you know, and I've struggled with both of those things. So I don't come at this from a, I don't know, I've never been sad kind of place. Like anxiety, depression, I've diagnosed in meds, I've had things. And, but meditation is it's a moment where like my brain will grind about whatever, like that is how our brains are made. And some of us, it seems, have that more than others. And meditation is, it's a little tool, it's a technique to give yourself a break from that. To like, okay, there's going to be stuff to worry about and upset about, and it's not that I'm ignoring them, but you know what? There is also this other thing. It's like an and to that. And I am okay right now for these 2 or 3 minutes. I am sitting quietly. Look, my breath is going. There's no, I like to think of it as, we put our attention on the breath. There's no bad news in the breath.
Mm.
I'm not doom scrolling. It's not a bill. It's like, there's no bad news in the breath. I'm just watching this natural thing and just kind of letting go of everything.
You're not going to lie awake at night so upset about the time you breathed sometime.
Like, yeah, regretted. Right. I mean, I guess
I breathed so stupid back then.
My brain suddenly is like, well, but if I had bad breath and he was cute, and then now I'm thinking about it. So thanks, John. Thanks
yeah,
for
sorry.
That. No,
yeah.
But there's always a way, I guess. Like, there's always a something to get. But it is, it's just like whatever's going on, we can take a break from being upset about it, I guess is sort of the gist of that. And that's a bit what meditation is. And we flex that muscle and we get better at that. We get better at that. Oh, this is okay.
Yeah. Let's return to now here. Let's get to the, make a journey to the present.
Get into the absence of upset. So we just get comfortable in a seat, a sofa, a bed, a chair, a floor, whatever's comfortable for you. And close your eyes. And then just very easily and naturally just notice your breath. Whatever it's doing and however it is, it's totally fine. And you're going to have thoughts as you meditate. This is totally normal. And you'll find your attention getting into your thoughts. And when you become aware of that, you just notice your breath again. Let's see if you can let go. Okay, you can go ahead and open your eyes slowly. You know, what occurred to me was, this was something that was shocking to me when I first learned to meditate. The concept of bliss, I always thought bliss was like ecstasy, you know,
joy,
like
joy and happiness.
Yeah, it was like thrill. And I literally pictured like kiss letters, but it's like bliss and like pyro, you know.
I'm part of the bliss army.
Yeah. Oh, bliss. And like, and so like day one or two, they were like, bliss is defined as supreme inner contentedness.
Oh.
And I was like, it felt like kind of a ripoff, to be honest, John. I was like, I'm not here, contentedness. And now I'm like, yeah, that's what it is. That's why we're not going for enlightenment or
right.
awesome sauce. We're just like, what we're missing in the anxiety of the future and the depression of the past is just, can you just notice a little bit of contentedness right now? Like just sitting, eyes closed, breath, letting go. Contentedness.
You may have said something after the idea of bliss in kiss lettering, but I started imagining a t-shirt and started wanting it, and all my contentedness fell away in favor of
wanting
that thing.
Well, I think we have a new t-shirt idea for our t-shirt item. Business.
Yep, there you go. There you go.
Depression Mode Bliss Army t-shirts. Please?
I was a little distracted during that one because you said just get comfortable in a sofa bed or chair. And I'm like, what's so great about a sofa bed? Like, why?
Oh, commas are so important.
Commas, yeah. So then sofa, I finally let that go after a few seconds into the silence. And then I was
amazing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Catch Bliss on tour at a domed stadium near you. Laura yeah! House. Yeah. I want to meditate all night and part of every day.
Nice.
Laura House is the co-host of the Tiny Victories podcast here on Max Fun. You can learn more about her and her work at laurahouse.com. Laura, thank you.
Thank you.
Bliss rules. Next time on Depression Mode, Patty was the drummer for one of the biggest bands in the world. Then, she was living on the streets of Los Angeles. In between, her lead singer, Courtney Love, tried to help.
Courtney calls me and says, you know, come over to my house. I want to talk about album art, which is, I should have known right there. Because, what? She never asked me about anything as far as our art goes. I walk in and there's the full intervention and a whole thing like, we're really afraid that you're going to die. And it was really intense because of Kurt, Kristen, and Courtney. I remember saying, you know, I'm not going to have another dead band member.
Patty Schemmel joins us. If people support our show through a small donation, we can keep being here together. If not, it all goes away and we have to stop. And I want to keep going, and I think you probably do too. If you donate already, you have made Depression Mode happen. You have helped your fellow human. Thank you. If you haven't donated yet, don't worry. It's easy. Find a level that works for you at MaximumFun.org/join. I wrote a book. Did you know that? It's called The Hilarious World of Depression. It's a memoir. It's about me and mental health and life. And there are jokes in it. People say that it has been a positive thing in their life and they enjoyed reading it. So perhaps you should read it. It's available where books are sold. Obviously, on account of it's a book. Be sure to hit subscribe on Depression Mode. Give us 5 stars. Write reviews. That helps more people find out about the show. That helps our mission of getting those conversations happening. Please know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 for free. 1-800-273-8255. That 8255 spells TALK, so 800-273-TALK. Please use our electric mail address and get in touch with us. DepressionMode@MaximumFun.org. I want to hear from you. See, you know, tell me what you think. Tell me what you liked. Tell me what you didn't like. Tell me your thoughts. Tell me tell me my horoscope. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. We're on Twitter and Instagram at DepreshPod. Our newsletter is available on Substack. Search for Depression Mode there. You'll find it. I'm on Twitter at John Moe. Hi, credits listeners. On a recent show, I talked with Drew McGarry about traumatic brain injury, or TBI. And I really concentrated on not accidentally saying TMI, too much information, instead of TBI, because that would be wrong and insensitive and embarrassing. But I concentrated so hard that at one point I did say TMI on that episode when I meant TBI. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry if that's too much blah, blah, blah for you. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason. I just keep believing.
I just keep on dancing.
This is Bea from Brooklyn, New York, and Tustin, California. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, peace begins with your lovely smile.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.